Well, the teal hymnal contains the best, and it contains the worst, in my opinion. The best, we sang it, Blue Boat Home. And the worst, is number 1003, Where Do We Come From? Listen to these words. Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? Where do we come from? Mystery, mystery, mystery. Life is a riddle and a mystery. Well, everything is not just a big mystery. This might have been true 150 years ago, but it is not true today. Times have changed. We are no longer ignorant. We know where we came from, and we know what we are. Just ask Mr. Darwin. And we know where we as individuals are going. We just don't like to admit it to ourselves. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So let's back up a bit and review some history. The history of thought about the universe, how it got to be, and how we fit in or not. Here's the Genesis story. It's a fairly standard Stone Age, Bronze Age description of reality. The Earth is flat, there's a dome over it. The sun and the moon and the stars circle the Earth. The size of the land, 1,000 miles at best. The oceans of water surround the land. The length of time reality has existed is measured by counting back some small number of human generations. There were, at that time, some people who knew the Earth was a sphere, the smarter mathematicians and the navigators, but not the people who wrote the holy books. Around 1500, it generally came to be acknowledged that the Earth was a sphere. This caused some consternation. It was counterintuitive. Up ain't up, and down was no longer down, but the Earth remained the center of reality. In the early 1600s, Galileo, the Italian astronomer, spent his last few years under house arrest and under threat of torture and execution for defending heliocentrism, the assertion that the sun was the center of reality. His contemporary, Copernicus, also a heliocentrist, had the good sense to put off publication of his book on the subject until after his, Copernicus's, death. Nevertheless, here we are living in a heliocentric solar system with the planets, including the one on which we live, orbiting the sun. Well, that was the 1600s, but it wasn't until 1838 when a German astronomer, Friedrich Bessel, was able to measure the distance to the stars and calculate the brightness of the stars, that it became apparent that the sun was just an ordinary star. Think about it. It was only in the mid-19th century that the size of reality went from being the solar system to the entire Milky Way galaxy. But that description of the size of reality did not last as long as any of the others. By the mid-1920s, Edwin Hubble, an American astronomer, demonstrated that all those hazy stars at the edge of the galaxy, the so-called nebula, were in fact other galaxies existing at enormous distance from our own. And wonder of wonders, all the galaxies were moving away from each other, moving away at increasing speed. A reality the size of the galaxy was suddenly dwarfed, and the concept of a steady-state reality was also out the window. If reality was expanding, then there must have been a beginning. A big bang, so to speak. Thank you very much, Mr. Alpher. And it also will have to have, as of necessity, an ending. Actually, Big Bang is not a good descriptive title. What it really should have been called is the evolution of the universe. A brief footnote here. At about the same time Mr. Hubble was expanding the universe beyond our galaxy, science started talking about reality in a different way. They started calling it the space-time continuum, recognizing that time is not independent of motion. So, is the current scientific description of reality correct? It's not a story like the Genesis story. It's not made up. It is a description based upon evidence, a description which has been tested over and over and over again. Science does provide truth as best as truth can be known. Water is two parts hydrogen and one part oxygen. The Earth is a sphere with a circumference of about 25,000 miles. The Earth is a planet orbiting in an ordinary star in the Milky Way galaxy. The Milky Way galaxy contains some 200 billion stars, similar to the Sun. All of these statements have been tested and essentially proven over and over again. They are facts, or as close to facts as humans can get. By the way, evolution is not a story either. The theory of evolution by natural selection is the scientific explanation for the complexity of life on the planet Earth. It has been tested and proven over and over again, and has been observed in laboratory experiments actually happening. The theory of evolution is about as certain as the theory of a heliocentric solar system. So, here's what we know. Here's what science tells us about the reality in which we live. How big is the solar system? Neptune, the outermost planet, orbits the Sun at a distance of 3.2 billion miles. The Milky Way galaxy is 100,000 light years in diameter and 1,000 light years thick. The observable universe contains 100 billion galaxies. That's 300 sextillion, 3 times 10 to the 23rd power stars. The radius of the universe is 46 billion light years. The universe has been around for 14 billion years. Also, everything that I have previously described, all the stars, all the planets in all the galaxies, and all the dust and gas in between, is only 5% of what makes up the universe. What's the rest? Dark matter and dark energy. How do we know that these exist? Dark matter accounts for the gravity of the universe, and dark energy explains the acceleration of the expansion of the universe, ultimately to a state of high entropy and cold uniformity. We recognize that we humans are creatures of the 5%. Dark matter and dark energy do not interact in any measurable way with the atoms and molecules that make up human beings, or the reality that we inhabit. By the way, the millions of neutrinos that pass through our bodies every second also do not affect the atoms and molecules of the human world. Surface of the Earth is teeming with life, but is the universe teeming with life? No, it's definitely not. Space, by virtue of its temperature, a few degrees above absolute zero, and ever-present radiation, is inimical to life. Life needs an atmosphere, water, and an energy source. This means that for life to originate and thrive, the requirement is for a planet with the right chemical makeup and in the right proximity to a star. The planet needs to be in what has come to be called the Goldilocks zone. There was recent excitement in the scientific community. A planet in the Goldilocks zone was found to be orbiting the very star which is nearest to our solar system, our next door neighbor, so to speak. Unfortunately, that planet had an 11-day year and no rotation. So habitation by some single-cell life is unlikely. Our nearest neighbor and its planet is 4 light-years away. That's 25 trillion miles, 25 trillion miles away. So here we are on this speck of dust that we call Earth, trying to figure out whether conditions are right for the formation of self-replicating molecules on another speck of dust 25 trillion miles away. There is no consciousness in between here and there. Everything in between is devoid of life. Now, bear in mind also that humans are looking for planets where life on a microbial level is possible. The Earth is such a planet, and life on Earth has been around for 3.5 billion years. For the first 3 billion of those years, it was single-cell life. It is only in the last 500 million years, give or take, that multi-cell creatures have existed. Human beings capable of describing reality in linguistic terms have been here for only, say, 200,000 years, and technologically competent humans only for the last 100 or so. How long will technologically competent humans be around? Such competence, such intelligence, is not a goal of evolution. Evolution has no goals. Technological competence may only be a freak outcome, and we have yet to see whether it will provide long-term success for our species. You live your incredibly short life in this cold, dead universe on a little speck of dust orbiting a very ordinary star, which will, in cosmological time, soon burn out. Are you depressed? Well, here's another question. Is the universe, the reality in which we live, monistic or dualistic? Does a spirit world which causes life or interacts with life pervade the universe like dark energy? Obviously, the answer is no, because life exists only upon this speck of dust that we inhabit. There may be other specks of dust out there in other galaxies, perhaps, where animate creatures exist, trillions upon trillions of miles away. But for all intents and purposes, it is fair to say the Earth is it for intelligent life. The universe clearly does not coexist with a spirit reality. So let's restrict the question to the planet Earth. A crude but rather accurate way to ask the question is there a spook in the machine? The science of evolution says that all life came from the same source 3.5 billion years ago. Life does not continue to arise. Since there is a continuum, there is nothing to differentiate one twig from another on the tree of life. If human beings have ghosts or a soul inside us, then what about Neanderthals and Denisovans? What about the great apes and dogs and snakes and worms and bacteria and viruses? Where is bacteria heaven, and how many bacteria are in it? To say that humans are qualitatively different from other life is to deny the fact of evolution and science itself. Well, science tells us that above the quantum level, we live in a deterministic reality. The interactions of the particles that make us up, the electrons, the protons, and neutrons, and the forces that act upon these particles, electromagnetism, strong and weak nuclear forces, and gravity, are all known. And all interactions ever observed are in accord with the laws of physics. Now, if our brains and nervous systems, which are made up only of the 3 types of particles acted upon by the 4 forces, were to be subject to influence by a non-physical realm, then such influence would show up as a violation of the laws of physics. no such violation of the laws of physics has ever been observed. If it did, it would be a miracle in the truest sense, and prayer would have to replace physics as the best predictive method. If there is no reality other than the physical reality of which we are part, then certain conclusions follow as of necessity. All human understanding is simply a construct in individual human brains. There is no independent world of forms or mathematics. Math and logic are simply aids to prediction by individual humans. There is no philosophy. Why? Because natural philosophy has been replaced by science, and beyond that, there are no objective standards. In short, is cannot be translated into ought. There is no religious truth. All of religion's explanatory functions have been replaced by science, and its control functions, prayer and supplication, have been demonstrated to be non-existent. Whatever remains of religion and philosophy has been replaced by psychology. If we live in a physical reality, then information must be physical also. Information is physical? Sounds crazy, but maybe not. The DNA in every one of your cells is a molecule with 3 billion base pair connections. Your DNA is both the information and the mechanism for assembling and preserving your physical makeup, your body. No, you. But what are you beyond your DNA-built structure? Personality and memory. Where do your personality and memory reside? In the 80 to 100 billion neural connections that make up your brain. When your body, which includes your brain, dies, there is no mechanism for the transfer of the information contained in the neural connections of your brain. When you die, your memories and your personality cease to exist, just like they did not exist before you were conceived, born, programmed, and reprogrammed by your experiences. Are you depressed yet? Is there any good news? Let's start with the misconceptions that all of us have about ourselves. First, there is no person inside or underneath your brain. There is certainly a subconscious or non-conscious function of the brain and the nervous system, but there is no homunculus, no little you that steers the outer you around the way a soccer mom drives an SUV. The illusion of a separate internal you may have a lot to do with the way our brain is programmed to interpret the electrochemical impulses it receives through the optic nerve. You are mind, body, personality, memories, and all the input and all the output that are part of a conscious entity. There's nothing unseen or underlying. You are what you get. Secondly, and more importantly, you are not sealed off from reality. You are a glob of matter, constantly bringing in new matter and expelling old. Every breath changes you. Also, information pours in through your eyes, ears, nose, and mouth, and through the soles of your feet and the palms of your hand. Every speck of information changes you. It is recorded in your nervous system and in the neural connections of your brain. You are part of reality, a part of the universe, not just a passerby on the way to an eternal theme park. You are dependent upon and connected to everything close around you, and connected to and dependent upon the earth and the sun and all the other stars in the cosmos. And that connection, that dependency, is not just for shelter, food, and breath, but for stimulation and information. Consciousness, and all life has got consciousness. is the constant quest for information. Now, here's something else, and I don't pretend to understand the science or mathematics that underpin the core theory of physics or quantum mechanics. Here's the something else. The observer matters. Do you remember hearing about the dual slot experiment, which raised the issue of whether light was a wave or a particle? It used to be an issue, but the answer is settled. It's a wave. In fact, everything is a wave until it is observed, and then the wave function breaks down and it becomes a particle. It can be fairly said that observation creates reality. What is an observation? It is the act by which the observing entity gets information. It is the transfer of information from the observed to the observer that changes both. It is literally the transmit of information that changes a wave to a particle. And what is an observer? Certainly any recording device, but more importantly, bacteria, trees, frogs, snakes, Neanderthals, Denisovans. And in the 21st century, on this planet, the most sophisticated part of the universe observing itself is the human being. Bacteria do get information from the world around them, but they cannot see the stars. A chimpanzee can see the Milky Way, but only a human can know what the Milky Way galaxy is and what is beyond. Our brief lives are simply the comedy between the tragedies of birth and death. But if anything deserves to be held in awe or called holy, it is that comedy. That comedy we live, you and I, is the universe finally in full awareness of itself. We are the universe aware of itself. Is it absurd? Yes. Can it be a psychological trick? Yes. But it is also the greatest and most comforting of thoughts. So what are we to do? Accept and be comfortable with your temporary nature. See the world around you as beauty and truth. Create value, create meaning. Rearrange your reality. The time and materials are in short supply. Savor every moment. So here are my last questions. If you truly understand your place in the universe, if you truly understand your place in the universe, how can you open your eyes in the morning and not be awestruck by the glory around you? How can you know your place in the universe and not be sure that in and for this instant, you are the exact center of all creation, and that all creation itself is dependent upon you for meaning and existence? How can you know your place in the universe and not smile and be fulfilled? How can you know your place and not smile? Thus ends a sermon. If you are an atheist, you cannot have eternity, but you can have love, hope, peace, and joy. Our closing hymn is number 95.